Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
You're ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. All of this could have been avoided if we'd followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
What was it you were saying about my voice?
It's loud, it's strong, and it's good, and I appreciate your support.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you for Honestly Provocative Talk Radio that serves the Pacific Northwest. And today, we're going to do even more than that. Not just talk about it, but we're going to do something. We're going to help a great faith-based organization, the Union Gospel Mission, feed hungry people. And UGM helps people out of addiction, off the streets, into a warm place with a meal in front of them. And $1.92 feeds one, and $50 feeds a couple of dozen. And you can make your donations to 888-955-9557. It is a faith-based organization that I believe in. And I think that you get the greatest bang for your buck in getting people some help, getting them a meal, getting them off the streets, and getting them the kind of help that'll help them to repair the situation they find themselves in. That's 888-955-9557. Now, we have a lot to talk about today, and I want to mention just a couple of the things, but I want to start with a public employee who has behaved in a terrible fashion. Now, I understand when it comes to politicians, we understand there are plenty of those people. I mean, there's Jay Inslee, there's Kate Brown. By the way, Kate Brown's getting sued, and we'll talk about that lawsuit today as well. But here's my question. Should trouble-causing public employees get golden parachutes in exchange for leaving their jobs? In other words, if you've behaved in such a way that the institution you work for can no longer tolerate having you around, and they decide that you should submit your resignation, should you get a check? A little check, or let's say a check the size of $250,000. That's exactly what one young lady is getting, an Evergreen State College professor caught on camera screaming at her white colleagues, has officially resigned after reaching a $240,000 settlement with the school. By the way, if you were wondering, Evergreen State College is a taxpayer-funded institution. Evergreen, of course, was, and we talked about this issue last year when it happened, consumed by racial turmoil this year and part of last, after a white professor questioned a demand that all white people leave campus for a day of diversity. Now, if you wonder, how do you get diversity by making all the white people leave or any one group segregated by race? Well, you know that doesn't make any sense. And yet that professor has had to leave the college as well. Why? Because a group that had previously sponsored a day in which all of the students of color and the faculty of color would voluntarily leave the college as a way of sending a message, this is what the college would look like without us on campus. Now, I don't have any objection to that. If a bunch of people want to get together and say, let's show folks what the campus looks like without women or without men or without people of color or without older people or without younger people, fine. If you want to do that, that's up to you. But then what the students and some of the faculty decided to back was the idea that we're going to make people leave. We're not going to make this a voluntary thing. We're going to tell you, if you have white skin, you have to get off campus. And Professor Weinstein objected to that idea, and I think rightfully so. Why in the world should you have to leave the campus because of your skin color? Why, that sounds illegal to me. And yes, I will get to Roy Moore here in just a second. But I wanted you to get a taste of the young lady who is leaving the campus now with almost $250,000 of the taxpayers' money. And you can imagine the kinds of things, the kind of intellect that she would have brought to some of those students while she was teaching on campus. Here's a slight, well, selection from one of her public speeches on the subjects that really fired her up.
And away from a conversation about the white supremacy that lives and breathes within every single white person standing here right now, I refuse to shut my mouth and let white people set this agenda. If what I'm saying right now pisses pisses you off, it makes you feel targeted and defensive, good. When the white gays, the white middle class assimilationist motherfucking gays took over the movement later with their assimilationist goals, kicked them out because they wouldn't act grateful for the scraps given to them by the racist politicians, racist police forces, and racist housing policies. They were black and brown people who understood that our liberation as queers is not distinct from other forms of liberation, and their struggle, my struggle, is not over.
Oh, just imagine at Evergreen College, your sons and daughters, if you've been foolish enough to send your kids to this crazy house. I mean, it's almost as bad as Western Washington, but Evergreen College is about as Looney Tunes as it gets. And remember, number one, your taxpayers are helping to fund this. Number two, we're sending this woman away with almost a quarter of $1 million, $240,000 as a golden parachute in exchange for her departure from the school. And just imagine, if she's one of their top professors and she was lauded by the provost of the university, who talked about the wonderful things that she had done in teaching your kids. Like I said, if you're crazy enough to send your kids to that college, that's a taste of what they get that's called education. So the Twitter poll today, should trouble-causing public employees get public golden parachutes to leave their jobs? I would say no to that. I would say that if you have engaged in that kind of crazy talk, I don't think you should get a dime. You should just get a pink slip. So if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, we got a lot to talk about today. That's on the agenda. We will talk about Roy Moore. And in the commentary in just a moment, I'll give you a couple of thoughts on that. We'll tell you about a $30 million lawsuit that has been filed against Governor Kate Brown for unfairly targeting a private enterprise with the enforcement activities of a state agency. We'll be raising money for the Union Gospel Mission. And if you missed the number, it's 888-955-9557. And if you missed that, just shoot me an email. talk@LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Yes, Judge Roy Moore of Alabama lost last night, and Democrat Party members everywhere around America can celebrate, but only do it for a while. They managed a once-in-a-century win in a very conservative state. But consider what it took to get it done. Scandalous allegations launched just 6 weeks out from the election date, which we will never really know the truth of. There's really no way to determine it. President Donald Trump had supported Moore's Republican opponent in the primary and did not immediately support Judge Roy Moore. The entire Democrat Party threw in for the effort, and the mainstream media certainly didn't give Moore the benefit of the doubt. He was guilty from the get-go. Much of the Rhino establishment party lineup against Moore. So if you get the most significant players in politics from both sides of the aisle and the fake stream media, you can get the win in a state like Alabama. Don't bet on Doug Jones in 2020 in Alabama, because many of the votes that got him that 1.5% margin last night were not votes for Jones. They were votes against Moore. In the meantime, we need Senator Mitch McConnell to immediately dump the filibuster. A majority of the people's representatives support the current tax plan. They support the repeal of Obamacare. They support nationwide concealed carry reciprocity, and they support building a southern border wall. McConnell should not let an artificial rule invented by the Senate keep that majority from voting for what the people of America really want, Roy Moore or not.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran-owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
Well, today's Daily Grill goes happily to Evergreen College, with your tax dollars at work paying almost a quarter of $1 million to a professor to resign. This is the same black professor who berated her white colleagues because they're white and was unhappy with the response that she got. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk. talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Papa Shoehorns, the perfect Christmas gift for everyone. On the web at PapaShoehorns.com. Get one for somebody you love. I've got one, believe me. Seattle Sam writes in, Lars, those of you who are placing Christmas lights and decorations in your yards, can you please avoid anything that's red or blue or flashing? Every time I come around the corner, I think it's the police and I have a panic attack. I have to brake hard, toss my beer, put out the joint, fasten my seatbelt, throw my phone on the floor, turn my radio down, and push the gun back under the seat, all while trying to put my clothes back on. It's just too much drama, even for Christmas. Thanks for your cooperation and understanding, and Merry Christmas from Seattle Sam. Back in just a moment, and don't forget, we're raising money for a great cause, the Union Gospel Mission. $1.92 feeds a meal. $50 feeds a couple of dozen meals to people who are hungry. 888-955-9557. That's 888-955-9557. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We're live all over the Northwest, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, serving the Northwest with honestly provocative talk radio. And I'd like to know from you, should we issue the kind of golden parachutes that we document on this program from time to time, where people behave badly as public employees, and then when they don't do their job, when they don't satisfy what the public agency wanted from them as an employee, then to get rid of them, we have to actually pay them money to leave, even though there is no formal contract. This isn't a situation like Matt Lauer leaving the Today Show. By the way, he's not getting paid because he did not exactly do his employer proud. But should trouble-causing public employees get golden parachutes to leave their jobs? This Evergreen State College professor, just the latest example, almost a quarter, $240,000 in a settlement to leave the school. Why? Because she decided to cause trouble, and she didn't like the kind of reaction when people objected to the way that she'd been speaking. And today we are raising money for the Union Gospel Mission. The number to help out, $1.92 puts a meal in somebody's belly. That's what you have to think about. There are hungry people out there. A lot of them are on the streets. You want to feed them? You want to feed those hungry people? Help me out. $1.92 feeds one. $50 feeds a couple of dozen. $100 feeds four dozen. Call the number 888-955-9557. My friend Kirby Wilbur said that he would put up 100. I'll match that 100. And if you want to find our Twitter poll, find it online at LarsLarson.com. And you can find our Twitter poll as well at the website, LarsLarson.com, and on Twitter at Lars Larson Show. Now, I wanted to ask you about something that Attorney General Bob Ferguson is doing. This guy seems to do everything except his job as Attorney General. He is now trying to shake down a charity organization for millions of dollars. And the charity I'm talking about, which I got no dog in the fight there, Tina and I have occasionally been in Value Village stores throughout the Northwest. They run 300 of these throughout the United States, Canada, and Australia. And now Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson wants $3 million from this charity. So the law firm that operates the charity, which is Davis Wright Tremaine, and if I have a dog in the fight there, it's only because years ago when I worked as a TV investigative reporter, we had a great attorney from Davis Wright Tremaine that represented us. But I don't have any other business with Davis Wright Tremaine. I did call the law firm this morning trying to get Bob Pfeffer on so that we could talk about this. The law firm is now bringing a lawsuit against State Attorney General Bob Ferguson, saying that his company has violated the company's rights by demanding a $3.2 million settlement to end a three-year investigation. Now, here's what they say. They say that the for-profit company, which is represented by Davis Wright Tremaine, said Ferguson's demand for payment does not appear to be connected to any alleged legal violations. He just wants the money. TVI also says the Attorney General's office insisted that its disclosure to customers of how much of the sale price of items in its stores goes to charities, something that the company said doing that would violate its free speech rights and is precluded by the Supreme Court. Ferguson says no target is ever happy to be investigated by our office. However, my office will continue vigorously protecting consumers from deception. Now, do you think you're being deceived? If you walk into a Value Village and you understand that it's run as a for-profit operation, but that they give millions of dollars to charitable causes. Do you need to see a sign inside Value Village that explains exactly how many dollars from each one of your purchases is going to go to that charity? Because that's what Bob Ferguson says he needs to see. TVI says it operates 20 stores in the state of Washington. It pays charities like the Northwest Center, which supports developmentally disabled people, and Big Brothers Big Sisters of Puget Sound to collect items like clothes and furniture and electronics, which it then sells for a profit at the stores. The money the charities make providing the goods is a key part of their revenue stream. In its complaint, the company says the Attorney General's office launched its investigation 3 years ago. TVI then answered all the investigators' questions. They provided 15,000 pages of documents, and they sought to meet with the Attorney General's office to try to satisfy whatever it was that the AG's office wanted. Turns out that all the AG's office wants is money. This is like, as I've said before, dealing with the government these days has become like dealing with the mob. If the mob comes and shakes you down because they say, gee, if you don't want bad things to happen, you'll pay us. And if you don't pay us, then bad things might happen. This is effectively what the Attorney General's office is doing. For example, yesterday I was out at the J. Stout Auction Yard because yesterday was the preview day. Today is their big auction day. They tell me that they have to pay $75,000 a year for the rainwater that runs off of their parking lot. Now imagine that, $75,000 a year. And what happens if you don't pay it? Bad things happen. This is becoming more and more the pattern with government. The government becomes a giant shakedown artist. Now, is TVI, the folks who run Value Village, are they actually breaking any of the laws? Bob Ferguson hasn't said so. Are they violating any of the rules and regulations for charitable organizations? Are they doing something bad because they give millions of dollars to various charities around the Northwest and around America? Apparently not. But Bob Ferguson wants $3.2 million for him to go away. Now, usually if you tell somebody, I want money to go away, and if you don't pay me the money, bad things will happen to you, we call that extortion. But apparently for Bob Ferguson, the Attorney General of the state of Washington, that kind of shakedown is not extortion at all. It's just the way he does business. You want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism? It's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and help out the UGM, 888-955-9557. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter from Willamette Week, Nigel Jaquess, joins me now. Nigel, you broke this story yesterday, and we mentioned it just in passing, but a lawsuit has now been filed against Oregon Governor Kate Brown. What's the lawsuit about, and how does it involve a private company that is regulated by the state?
It's a lawsuit that was filed in federal court yesterday by Bullseye Glass, which is a Southeast Portland manufacturer of colored art glass that's used in windows and architectural designs and for decorative purposes. The lawsuit basically makes three claims. The biggest is that the state, that the governor and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality treated Bullseye differently from other corporations that emit pollution or toxic metals. The lawsuit lists a number of companies, including Esco and Owens Brockaway, that emit vastly more lead, cadmium, arsenic, whatever toxic metal you want to talk about, than Bullseye does, and have done so openly and without any disciplinary action by DEQ for years. So it's a disparate or differential treatment claim. They claim that DEQ and the state acted based on unproven or junk science. That was a moss study done by the U.S. Forest Service that Bullseye says has never been used for that purpose before, and they don't believe that it was accurate. The third claim is the least objective or provable, but although it may indeed be provable, they claim that the governor acted out of political expedience rather than out of public safety. So they're making very strong claims. The company hired, part of what I found eye-opening about the lawsuit was that they hired two former top U.S. attorneys, the longtime criminal chief in the U.S. Attorney for Oregon's office, Kent Robinson, and the guy who was his top white-collar crime prosecutor, Alan Garten. Together, those guys were federal prosecutors for 55 years, and two people that you really would not want to have looking through your emails or deposing your employees.
Now, tell me this. They say she's being expedient. Is this because Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality, which is charged with safeguarding the environment and watching the activities of for-profit companies and all in the way that they interact with the air and the water and the land in Oregon, they missed this altogether. The Forest Service was doing a study on moss on trees, and they said, we've found what appears to be higher levels of arsenic and cadmium and lead in the moss on trees in a particular neighborhood, and we think it might indicate that stuff is being put in the air somehow, and that's the only reason the DEQ became aware of this. And even when the Forest Service gave them a heads up about it, that they didn't act for close to a year. Finally, they were embarrassed because a tiny little alternative weekly called The Mercury, a newspaper, published a story about it, which I think humiliated both the DEQ and the political masters of the DEQ, and that's why Kate Brown and her administration came back and landed on Bullseye like a ton of bricks, because they'd been caught red-handed. They weren't safeguarding the environment. They didn't find out about the stuff being in the air, and all of a sudden the public wanted to know, why aren't you doing anything about this? So then they overreacted. Is that the theory?
That is certainly part of the theory. I mean, as I said, the case, the lawsuit lays out numerous examples of far more egregious pollution, you know, vast quantities of heavy metals and other toxins that ESCO pumped into Northwest Portland for many years before shutting down, and I think you've hit it exactly. That DEQ has long had a reputation for being a paper tiger or a toothless tiger and not doing its job. And I think that when the Mercury published this story about a manufacturing facility right in the heart of Southeast Portland, you know, near where the governor's legislative district was when she served in legislature, near where many of her staff lived in Southeast Portland, near where many, you know, highly connected, politically connected Portlanders live, they felt like they had to do something, and they had to do something really quickly. And of course, what so far has transpired is a lot of nothing. I mean, they did soil testing and blood testing of people in the neighborhood and of property in the neighborhood, and really didn't find a lot. So what Bullseye wants is, you know, they say they lost a lot of business. They say their reputation was damaged. They would like to be compensated for that. And, you know, I mean, there are a lot of lawsuits filed that never go anywhere, and I don't know where this is going, but these are very strong claims made by a very impressive legal team. So it should be interesting.
Is there any doubt that they did lose some of their reputation in this?
I don't think there's much doubt about that. I mean, they were forced to shut down various aspects of their operation. In the lawsuit, they cite a number of interactions with customers. They cite a lot of negative media coverage. I mean, they were kind of a niche player, but a beloved, you know, one of the only people making colored art glass in this country. There are very few left in the United States. And they had a very good reputation, and clearly that reputation was impacted by numerous stories saying that they were knowingly, you know, contributing to the damage of people's health, the reduction of their property values. So it would be hard to avoid the conclusion that they were damaged.
Are they suing the governor personally as well as governor?
Well, she's named in the lawsuit, but that's a convention that you see regularly. The typical occurrence is that the governor will be removed personally, and that the state will be the defendant. the lawsuit. There are many lawsuits that are filed against governors and other elected officials, and then the elected official is removed early in the proceedings, and the state or the government body is the defendant.
Okay, so in this case, and do we know how fast this is going to come about? Because Kate Brown, after all, has another election to win, right?
Well, you know, federal court moves more slowly than state court, but I think to your point, if what you're trying to determine is how involved might she be, I mean, if you remember, the governor was writing cease and desist letters. She was on the news. She was, I think she took a real interest in this case. So part of what, if the lawsuit is to proceed, part of what you would expect would be to see the lawyers for Bullseye making large discovery requests for emails and other documents between the governor and her staff and DEQ. You would expect to see them begin to depose the governor, perhaps, and her staff and people at DEQ. So I would expect that should this lawsuit continue, that there will be a lot of information that they will be able to bring out that we haven't yet seen. We don't know what really happened behind the scenes, but we'll find out if the lawsuit moves forward.
And Nigel, one of the bottom lines is, was there ever any proof that anyone was harmed by any of what Bullseye did?
Well, no. The blood test that the Multnomah County Health Department did, as far as I know, did not determine harm. Now, you know, I'd say that with a big caveat because, as you know, the effects of toxins and heavy metals are long-term rather than short-term. It's not typically the case that if you breathe in something that's bad for you that you're immediately, you know, struck ill or struck dead.
Understood.
So I think we don't really know, but certainly the soil testing and the blood testing that was done last year didn't turn up a lot.
Well, the other piece of it is, even if it isn't proved to have committed any harm, is there any proof that Bullseye violated the rules? Or was this more a screw-up of government where the government didn't have the rules in place that they might have needed, and so they sought to blame their lack of rules on the private company that had not violated any rules?
That's Bullseye's contention, that they were always acting within the parameters of their DEQ permit, that they were regularly in touch with DEQ saying, hey, here's what we're putting into our furnaces, here's what's coming out of our furnaces. Are you okay with that? And their contention is that they were fully transparent with DEQ, and DEQ was okay with that. So, again, that may be a point of contention.
Well, the other thing is that gap between when the Forest Service went to DEQ and said, hey, we're finding this in the moss, you ought to be aware of it, and then there was a long time gap where DEQ didn't act on that. Are they going after that part of it as well?
They are. So their contention is, look, if the Forest Service came to you, DEQ, and said there's a problem and it may be Bullseye, we would expect that you, DEQ, would come to us. You know, you're our regulator. We've got a relationship with you. If you think we're doing something we shouldn't be, we would expect you to come to us and tell us about it so we can investigate and make changes if there is indeed a problem. And so part of what their contention is that the DEQ did not act in good faith. Did not come to them and say, hey, there's this Forest Service test and it's concerning us. Instead, they didn't come to the company for about a year. And it appears, again, that they came primarily under pressure as the mercury story came out in February of 2016 and brought this to the public's attention. Then all of a sudden it became a crisis.
Very good. Hey, you can read the whole story by Nigel Jaquas at WWeek.com. Nigel, great work again, and thanks so much for taking the time with me today.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
You bet. Nigel Jaquas, the Pulitzer Prize winner from Willamette Week. Back in just a moment. By the way, I want you to help out Union Gospel Mission. We're aiming at feeding hungry people. There are hungry people, and this time of year, we are especially attuned to that with the cold weather outside in the Northwest. $1.92 feeds one. $50 feeds a couple of dozen. Call 888-955, that's 9557. That's 888-955-9557. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The hardest part about being homeless is trying not to look or smell homeless. So for me to try to look presentable, you know, to get a job is hard. It's tough to be judged because the way you look, to not be given a chance. Yeah, coming here Yeah, there was no judgment. Everybody, you know, understands. Some have been there. It's nice to be able to have a place to go, even if just for a few hours, to get a snack and get dry. It did mean a lot. I was grateful because I know it's a privilege, not a right. You know, so I was really happy and, you know, grateful for that. The meals are good. Dinner's really good. Yeah, it helps, you know, get me by it for another day, you know, until I can start working again.
Now, that's Chris that you're listening to, and sitting in the studio with me are the men who know him well, David Harms and Bill Russell from the Union Gospel Mission. And I'm so glad to work with you two, because you know that I talk about this issue a lot public policy issue. And people say, well, Lars, you don't like the homeless. I said, no, I don't like homelessness. I want to get people back into a regular life. And that's part of what the Union Gospel Mission tries to do, starting with a full belly.
Yep.
Right, David?
Well, that is the beginning point. It is like the analogy that I use all the time is the domino effect. And I'm not going to bore you with physics, but there are some physics attached to this. If you put a domino up in a chain reaction, when you put the mass of the domino in motion, it creates the energy. So that when you tip one domino into the next domino, that second domino can be 1.5 times the size of the first domino, and it tips over into the next domino 1.5 times its size, next domino 1.5 times its size, and on and on. By the 29th domino, it's the height of the Empire State Building. Now, the meal, that $1.92 that it takes to provide a meal, that's the first domino. So if we want to end homelessness, you got to start somewhere. And that meal is that starting point. It sets everything else in motion so that we get people off the streets. But we got to start there. So that's why we ask you to start there with a gift. We've talked about it all day. $100 provides for 52 meals. So people can call, do it right now, and start that process.
Well, in fact, my friend Kirby Wilbur from Seattle, who is one of my fellow hosts, he said when I told him about it this morning, he said, I'll put 100 in. I said, match your 100.
Nice.
And we've all got other people matching as well. Bill, you want to talk about, I just say $1.92 feeds one, $50 feeds a couple of dozen, and $100 feeds 4 dozen. That's an easy way to think about it in terms of round numbers about putting food in bellies.
Yeah, it's really important. And we're maximizing it. We can bring that cost down by using volunteers, donated food, and you know, maximization, leverage is what it's all about, because there's so many more people today than when you and I first started talking who are out of it and who need to get back with it. And so it starts with a meal. We are doing more meals than ever. And we're reaching out in the neighborhoods now, and people say, wait a minute, don't feed the homeless in our neighborhood. We don't want them to stay here. I say, what do you want to do? You want them to commit crime in your neighborhood? They're there. There's no room downtown. They're spread everywhere. We need to get them not just out of Old Town. We need to get them out of every neighborhood in Portland.
Well, and we want people to call in and donate. 888-955-9557. So, Bill, tell me this. Long term, we've got about a minute till the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Long term, you make changes in these people's lives.
Yeah, there is a way to get transformation to happen. And at the end of the day, my chief measurement is 5 years from now is a guy working, paying taxes, being productive. Because that's what everybody
wants.
That's
a good measure.
And you can't keep a job. I look at that measurement because you can't be shooting drugs and keep a job. You can't be irresponsible and keep a job. So we aim everything at the metric. Do you have a home? Do you have a job, and that's going to generate a good home? And do you have a support community, a faith community, a church that you're part of? If you have those three things, we have over 80% success.
David?
Well, and that's why our success rate when someone completes our program is 75%. 75% of those that go through our program don't relapse. Governments would say 30% is a high percentage. Our percentage is 75%.
That's because of two things. You're private and you're faith-based. And David, I can say that. That's why your program works. 888-955-9557. Help fill a belly with the Union Gospel Mission.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
I know.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
Should be played at high volume.
This is the Lars Larson Show. Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
When enough people make false promises, words stop meaning anything.
This is honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Your voice is beautiful. I've heard it for a long time.
You are enjoying the miracle of radio.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you today. By the way, today we're helping a great faith-based organization, Feed Hungry People, the Union Gospel Mission that helps people out of addiction, off the streets, into a warm place with a meal in front of them and a 75% likelihood that they will stay off the streets and into a conventional life. $1.92 feeds one person. $50 feeds a couple of dozen. You can donate as I have at 888-955-9557. That's the Union Gospel Mission, a faith-based organization that really gets the biggest bang for your buck when it comes to helping people by getting them a full belly. You got to get them a meal. 888-955-9557. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails in just a moment. But I want to welcome to the program Bob Narabout, who's a board member on the National Immigration Forum and the former executive director of the Idaho Dairymen's Association. Mr. Narabout, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm glad to be on.
A number of leaders in your group from California and Utah and the state of Washington are asking the Congress to come up with a permanent solution for the so-called Dreamers. These are the deferred action on childhood arrivals, people who are in the country because they came in as children, some of them as old as 16 or 17, but that they came in before they were adults, and they've been given deferred action under the Obama administration, and now that is about to run out in a few months. For some people, it already has run out. What kind of solution do you think Congress should reach to this?
Well, I think the solution I need to reach on the Dreamer situation is a solution that's compassionate, that looks at the situation and said, these are individuals who are in our country, they're contributing to our society, and we need to make a way that they are here with a legal status to be here. And I think that's critical. I think we have to recognize that a lot of us, particularly if you live in rural communities, you know Dreamers. You might not know you know Dreamers, but you know Dreamers. They're young, they're educated, speak perfect English. You might not have a clue that they're a Dreamer and they're here and their status is at a point where they might not be able to contribute to our society anymore. So it's time that Congress acts. This is the very first step of what has to happen in immigration reform, but it should be the easiest step for Congress to look at this, have compassion, and say, these are the people that we want in our country. They contribute to our country.
Well, Mr. Narabout, I've made no secret of it. I'm not in favor of this because I think that being compassionate to people who are here in this country breaking the law works to the disadvantage not only of those legal, legitimate American citizens and people who came in legitimately under green cards, but it also spits in the face of all the people who did it legally. They came in and took the sometimes years-long process to come in legally. How can it be compassionate if we grant these people a place in line many years ahead of the folks who actually did it the right way?
So, number one, I don't think you and I are on the same page as far as the place in line we're talking about.
Oh, we're not.
We're talking about legal status, giving them the right to be here with legal status. I'm not saying citizenship. I'm saying legal status. These are young people who were taken here. Most of them, I do hear you reference them at 16 or 17. Most of them, very small children who had no right to say, yes, I want to come or no, I don't want to come. They were brought by their parents. This is the country they know. This is, to their knowledge, this is their country, and it should be their country. And I'll disagree with you. I think this country is a country of passion. We're a country of laws, but we're also a country of compassion. And we should be looking at individuals who are contributing to our society and saying, you know, we might have not done it right since 1986. We might have had what I call a wink and a blink policy where it really wasn't being enforced. And we have people that are stuck in this country. They're here within our borders. They're contributing. They should be having a way to have legal status in this country.
You say they're stuck in our country. Anybody in our country who wants to leave can leave anytime they want. And many of these people, especially if they did come as small children, have benefited from a tremendously expensive K-12 public education, in most kids' cases, worth more than $100,000. So they went to school from, say, age 5 to age 18. They got a great high school education. And then, and if they had to leave to go back to their home country and then re-enter legally, they would actually be at a tremendous advantage over most of the people in their home country, would they not?
So where I'm going to go back to with is that these kids are in this country. They're already contributing to this country. Their parents, if they're gainfully employed, and most of them are gainfully employed, are paying taxes in multiple ways. If they rent housing, they're paying property taxes through the landlord they pay. If they're buying groceries, they're paying taxes. At least in the state of Idaho, you have tax on groceries. Mm-hmm. If you're buying any services, you're paying taxes. So you might want to talk about the education and the cost of the education, but they contributed to covering that cost.
Hold on. $100,000 of public education. How much do you think the average 20?
You want facts or do you not want facts?
Well, I want facts, but you're saying
so
things that aren't true.
Cost of deportation. Every deportation individual who's deported costs $23,000 to the government to deport. Take the 12 million times 23,000, we're over $250 billion. Not a very good fiscal sound policy. It's much more of a sound policy to look and say, let's identify the people who are here contributing, who are working hard, who are paying taxes, and identify them and have a legal status for them. And then we can take the dollars that we have left and available and look at those who we don't want in this country.
Mr. Narabat, how generous should we be about crimes that have been committed by these DACA folks while they're here? Should we say...
Name those crimes.
Well, I'll give you one example. A young lady who is a DACA, she ran over two small girls in her car. She didn't realize she had run them over. It's a strange set of circumstances. But when she found it out, she did not go to the authorities and say, I ran over these two girls. She committed the crime of failure to perform the duties of a driver, which is a felony crime where she did it. She got no punishment at all. And she will likely be considered for permanent status under the reform that you're talking about. Should you give her a pass? She killed two little girls.
With not understanding why she didn't have any punishment at all, I would say they would fall into the same system that if I, as an individual, did the same thing in society, would have the same punishment put on me, or at least have a criminal trial, a case, and finding out guilt or innocence.
Actually, that's not true, because I've had friends who are green cards. If you commit a serious crime while you have a green card, you get kicked out of the country, right?
I'm not an immigration attorney, so I can't respond.
Well, I'm not an immigration attorney either, but you know the law. If you're here on a green card and you commit a serious crime, you get booted out of the country.
What I understand is that, number one, you're picking and choosing very small pieces to try and establish your basis on. I think you have to look at the broader picture.
No, I just ask you. How forgiving should we be about crimes that these people have committed while they've been DACA?
I think you have to look at each individual case and determine where you need to be in that case. I think as a society, we have to have compassion on these young people. I think as a society, we have to have compassion on all the foreign-born labor within our gates. Whether they're out of the Hispanic community or whether refugees, we have to have that compassion. That's my position. That will remain my position.
Mr. Narabat, can you answer one last question? How much of your position comes about because, as the former executive director of the Idaho Dairymen's Association, you wanted to find a way to have your dairymen get cheap labor, and illegal alien labor is cheap labor?
So none of my position is based on that, because you are really ignorant on this subject. Number one, there's not a visa program available for people to come into this country.
H-2B?
We don't qualify for H-2B. We do not qualify
then
for
maybe
H-2B.
You should you hire Americans to do that work?
Americans can come and do the jobs anytime they want to come in.
Well, you won't offer the money.
Let's see. The starting wage right now in a dairy is about $14 an hour. Where would you like us to put that wage?
Well, $14 an hour for very hard, dirty work, usually at opposite ends of the clock. That's a small amount of money for that kind of work. Construction work starts at $16 an hour. So it seems to me that your dairyman...
Doesn't start at $16 in the state of Idaho. And number one, just so you know, I milked cows for 20 years, so I take offense to you saying it's extremely dirty, ugly work.
I say it's hard, dirty work. I'm giving you a spot of recognition. I grew up with dairymen. I know how hard it is to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go out and milk cows. Is that not hard, dirty work?
It's not hard, dirty work. It's very enjoyable work if you enjoy working with animals.
Okay.
Working with animals is a skilled labor position.
All I'm saying is that somebody who does a hard job should get paid a really good wage.
I think starting at 14, it's double the minimum wage in the state of Idaho. So starting at $14 an hour is not a bad position. I know the top wages are around $20 an hour for milkers, all depending on the location.
Is it fair to say that the majority of the dairymen in your state employ illegal aliens, and it's because they can get them to come and do that work?
No, it's not fair to say, because you go on any of our dairies, to the best of our knowledge, the people who come to our dairies to work have all the proper documentation to say they are here legal with legal status.
Boy, so I can. I bet I can buy that documentation on any street corner in the state of Idaho, can't I?
Well, I don't know about that. I've never tried. Maybe you have, but I've never tried.
Well, maybe you should try. Mr. Narabout, I appreciate it. Do you want to send my listeners to any particular website to read your point of view on this?
No, I really don't.
Okay, very good. I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you very much. That's Bob Narabout, a board member on the National Immigration Forum. He and his fellow members of that National Immigration Forum would like to see the Congress pass a law that allows the currently deferred action for childhood arrivals to stay in the United States without any other consequence. And, of course, they'll get to work jobs here as well. Glad to get your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And, by the way, the Union Gospel Mission helps people out of addiction, off the streets, into a warm place with a meal in front of them. $1.92 feeds one. $50 feeds a couple of dozen. Call 888-955-9557. We can match your donations up to $2,000 right now, dollar for dollar, at 888-955-9557. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Brian Smith writes in, Lars, great interview just now. Mr. Narabout was so flustered because he couldn't answer your pointed, well-thought-out questions, and he knew it. I often wonder how somebody reacts after a situation like that, especially a man like Bob, who I'm sure is rarely challenged like that. Cognitive dissonance is very powerful. Interviews like that are a highlight, along with your general commentary, which are why I tune in. Brian, thank you very much. Those are very kind words. Let's go to Michelle in the Dalles. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, Lars. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. What's on your mind today?
Well, I do enjoy your program, and I don't lean right or left. So
thank
I want to say I'm pretty center in my political leaning. But just listening to that interview and then directly afterwards, asking for donations to the Union Gospel Mission, I just wanted you to explain to me how it's justified to, like, compartmentalize compassion for one group of people that need our help and need our compassion versus, like, a DACA recipient who is also in that similar position. Like, is it just because one was born here and one was not?
Well, part of it is because, one, I'm asking for help in our community, but I don't have much respect for people who steal what they have. And somebody who is an adult, and the DACAs are all adults, since we're not talking about children anymore, those DACA adults could have done the legal, responsible thing. They have chosen not to do it, and President Obama aided and abetted that by saying, we're going to give you a pass on following the law. And President Obama didn't even have a respect for you and me and everybody else in this country of going to the Congress saying, I think we ought to change this law as it applies to children, because he could have done that. Do you know why President Obama did not go to the Congress and ask them to change the law?
I think it's because we're in that process now. Is that not correct?
No, Here's what happens. Michelle, when you were a kid, did you ever do something where you knew that if you asked mom and dad for it, they'd tell you no, so you just went ahead and did it and took the chance that you could get away with it?
Sure.
That's what Obama did. He knew that the Congress would tell him no. I mean, part of the Congress was Democrat at one point, and part of it was Republican. And he knew that if he went to them, he was going to get a good, solid no. So he said, well, screw it. I'll just do it anyway. And I'll do it without going through the process for changing laws, which, since President Obama was a constitutional scholar, all he had to do was consult his own knowledge of the Constitution and say, there's this law, and it says I have to kick these 1 million DACA kids out. How can I get that law changed? And if Obama had any doubt about it, he could have sat there in the Oval Office, cracked open his copy of the Constitution, and said, now, how is it again you change laws here? Oh, that's right. You go to a senator or a representative You get them to introduce a bill. You pass it through the House. Then you pass it through the Senate. Then you walk it up the hill to the White House, and the president signs it. And he says, but I can't do that because the people's representatives don't want to change that law. So when people are protected by that kind of compassion, you're saying we should tell people who've been breaking the law in some cases for as long as 20 years, who are now in their 30s, who have been getting literally tens of thousands of dollars in extra compensation by working in this country, because, and they get, you know, all kinds of other benefits of being in this country as well that are harder to quantify, and say, but they're breaking the law in doing it. So we should just let them keep on breaking the law. Well, if you want to do that, ask the Congress to change the law. Doesn't that seem reasonable to you?
Yeah, it does seem reasonable to ask the Congress to change the law. But that's what I don't believe that you're asking, like, your point of view is that we shouldn't have that compassion to people that are looking to stay here legally and are contributing to our society.
Well, let me tell you why. Michelle, can I tell you why? I'll tell you why. There are lots of people who've called this show over the last 20 years who will tell you that their wife or their husband came into this country legally, that it took them years, it took them thousands of dollars, they had to fill out forms, they had to jump through hoops, they had to do all kinds of things to do it legally. It was very hard, and then once they got in with that green card, they knew that if they broke any serious law in this country, they might get away with shoplifting a pack of gum, but beyond that, any law breaking was going to get them kicked right out of the country. So those people, you're spitting in their face saying you didn't have to go through all that process. You could have just jumped into the United States illegally, and then we'll just let you stay, like we're letting about 12 million illegal aliens, most of whom are not DACA, stay here. Do you think that's compassionate to all the people who did it legally?
No, I just think there should be a step that they can take to become here legally.
There is one.
Automatically deported with
there is
nowhere
one.
To go.
No, there is one. The illegal alien who's here can go back to their home country and get in line with everyone else and do it legally. But there are people here who, for financial reasons, like Mr. Narabout, who, you know, his dairyman members want to be able to have cheap labor. And one of the ways to have cheap labor is to employ illegal aliens, like a kind of indentured servitude, which is kind of shameful, frankly. But they want to be able to have that. And they say, no, those people shouldn't have to go follow the law. Well, Michelle, you have to follow the law, and I have to follow the law, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And by the way, today we are helping the Union Gospel Mission that helps people out of addiction, off the streets, into a warm place with a meal in front of them and a 75% record of success with helping people out, really changing their circumstances. $1.92 feeds one person, $50 feeds a couple of dozen, $100 feeds four dozen. Call 888-955-9557, and right now we'll match your donations up to $2,000. We're matching those right now. To your calls now, let's go to RT. Hey, RT, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. I wanted to touch on the immigration's issues and problems that we're having in this country.
Yeah.
You know, this unfortunately has been going on for quite some time now, Lars, and, you know, it continues to get worse. You know, we got people who believe that, you know, we need special laws for these people who are breaking laws, and I just don't understand the reasoning. And when you try to talk with these people, they say, well, don't you have any compassion? And my answer to that question would be, yes, to a point. And so I think what we need to do is just stick with the laws that we already got in place. And if these people feel compassionate towards these people who are breaking the laws, they can get in line with everybody else. And there's laws in place that they can come. But
I would like people who think this, like the young lady who called in, sure, I think our heart's in the right place. But I think what she hasn't considered is that every time you place one of these DACA people in a job, you're taking a job that an American would otherwise fill. And then what you're saying to your fellow citizens is giving this guy a job or this gal a job is more important out of compassion than allowing you to have a way to earn a living, which I don't think is compassionate to Americans. And I think this country's policies should be set to benefit those of us who are legally here and following the law.
Well, you know, if you want to be compassionate, I mean, just here's an example. You know, look at all the homeless people we have. And let's say Lars and myself are very compassionate people, and we decide to take on 10 or 20 of those people at our house.
Yeah.
How long is that going to last?
Not too long, which is why we're doing the fundraiser for the Union Gospel Mission today, because they actually...
And a very worthy cause. I can't express that enough. I think that's a very worthy cause. But, you know, we just cannot take on more illegal people in this country. We got so many illegal people in this country, we don't even know who's here.
No, we really don't. And that's been a problem, especially since 9/11. And that's been a long time ago, 16 years ago. Let's go to Paul in Estacada. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hello, Lars. How you doing?
I'm doing very well today. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
You too. Well, yeah, I think you hit a nerve with that guy at the milk board. You know, when he shuts you down that quickly, there must be some truth to that, you know.
When he shut me down, what do you mean?
Yeah, well, when he didn't want to give his web address and stuff.
I was being generous. I wanted him. His group sent out a press release saying that leaders of this group wanted the Congress to consider it. So we reached out to them and said, "Do you want to come on and make your case on this program?" And we gave him a chance to make his case. And I figured giving his website out was a way, because I read other people's websites that I disagree with.
Oh, yeah.
Because I want to get the information. I don't have to agree with something just because I read it.
And another point on this DACA thing. I don't think anybody really has touched on it. You know, I'm out of Portland, Oregon out here. So I go to like the immigration rallies and stuff to take pictures and stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I noticed?
What's that?
I noticed that they're pretty well funded. I have actual pictures of like the signs they carried. And they had union labels on them.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. The unions see the illegal aliens as the next group of potential memberships for their unions, and I believe it. So let's go to Louie in Woodburn. Hey, Louie, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Merry Christmas, Lars.
Merry Christmas.
This guy from the dairy department there, I don't know, just looking for cheap labor for large dairies is all he's looking for. And the family dairy can't make it. And most of the family dairies are gone out of business or going out of business because of that. The cheap labor they're getting. And, of course, the taxpayers give them food stamps and hospitalization and schooling and all that stuff, which costs us money, too. The other thing that I don't know if you forgot it or not, but
what's that?
In the last year Obama was in office, he flew in two plane loads, and I think maybe more, from South America, teenagers. And my cousin in Michigan remembers it well because two towns over from where she lived, there was an empty church with a hall and everything, and they closed down. And they put a plane load in there. All had tattoos on them, 13th Street gangs and stuff like that.
MS-13.
We've got enough gangbangers in Michigan. We don't need more.
I couldn't agree with you, man. I haven't forgotten about it. Believe me, we talked about all those thousands and thousands of people who came in across the border, and because they had messed with the laws to make it possible to do that, except they hadn't changed any of the laws. They just decided to interpret them slightly differently. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. At 866-HEY-LARS, that's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. You know, the war on the car continues. I just saw this story in the Saddle Times Fish Wrapper this morning. You know, we've been talking about tolls in the Portland area and tolls that are already being charged on some of the freeways in the Seattle area. I haven't seen any yet for Eugene or for Spokane, but now they say talks have started about how much they should toll for the brand new tunnel, the Highway 99 tunnel that goes under Seattle. This thing cost billions of dollars. And they now say that tolls might begin March 1st, not next year, but the year after that, 2019. And they would range from $1 during the overnight hours to a top rate of $2.50 just to drive down Highway 99 because it goes through the tunnel. And so here's what they're trying to do. They say they want to keep the rates low, so you're going to pay to drive on a highway that you've already paid for, so that drivers will choose to use the new tunnel under downtown Seattle rather than clogging up other roads. Tolls also would range up to $2.50, although I think they're going to find they're going to have to charge a whole lot more than that. At prices like those, this is the way the Seattle Times puts it, the misery of alternate commuting streets will outweigh the price of the tolls, according to an advisor to the Washington State Transportation Commission. Tunnel tolls are required by the state legislature to repay $200 million in construction bonds. Now, originally, when they originally thought of this tunnel, they said, we're going to have the tolls pay off $400 million. But then they realized just how unrealistic it was to try to get $400 million back. They say the tolls would also cover $5 million a year in the tunnel's maintenance and utility costs. The overhead costs of collecting the tolls alone are $8 million a year, and that could use up more than one quarter of all the income. So they are anticipating taking in more than $30 million a year in tolls. A quarter of that goes just to the cost of collecting the tolls. Another almost a quarter of it goes to the maintenance costs on the tunnel. And then some of it will go to pay off some of the bonds for the cost of building the tunnel. But not nearly, I don't even think nearly half of the money that they spend on that. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, shalom, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well.
My point was about the immigration situation. I haven't heard you bring it up, but...
What's that?
Just real quick, they sneak in. That's federal, right? Federal crime.
If they come in a second time, it's a criminal act. The first time, it's a civil offense. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's say they establish here. Okay, I'll ride that. But so they get, let's say they get, I've worked with them, they get a job.
Yeah, and, illegally.
That's illegal. Okay, and so that's employer fraud, too. That's employer federal, and that's employee federal. And then you run that to the end, and they get a house or an apartment or something. Now are you aiding and abetting an illegal alien when you're...
Not as long as all their paperwork looks like it has the ink that's dry. 866, hey Lars, that's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And by the way, the Union Gospel Mission does a fantastic job getting people out of addiction, off the streets, and into a warm place. Today, we want to put a meal in front of those people. $1.92 feeds one, $50 feeds a couple of dozen. Call 888-955-9557. Tina and I have donated today. We'd like you to donate as well. And we're matching your donations dollar for dollar, all the way up to $2,000. That's 888-955-9557. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
Being on the street was very rough for me because I am a survivor, but it took a lot from me as far as my self-respect. I started to give up. I started to think that I will never be able to rebound. At first, it was okay, but then I realized that there's more to it. When you live on the street, it makes you look at yourself differently. And even people look at you differently after a while. Anywhere you go, if you go to the store or if you go anywhere, when you walk up to people, that's the first thing that happens, you know, that they smell that stuff on you. And it takes a strong person to be able to persevere through that and walk around, you know, trying to hold your head high.
And that is Russell's story. And David Harms joins me now from the Union Gospel Mission. We're raising money for the mission today, as we do every year. And if you want to make a donation, we want to put a sense of urgency under you. $250 has been pledged against the $2,000 match.
Right.
So there's still $1,750 available to match at 888-955-9557. Tell me about Russell.
Well, Russell obviously is somebody that experiences what most people do when they're on the street. You figure out, how do I get a job? If I don't look good, how do I get a shower? How do I get an address? How do I get a phone number? All those things are services that we obviously provide, because our job at the mission is not to enable anybody, but to prepare them. We say care and connect and coach, right? So we care for them first. We connect them to places that get, including our own programs, and we coach them into a life that will now be the taxpaying citizen and all the rest. So when somebody walks in the door, we got to meet those first needs, and that's the meal that we've been talking about. Each meal is $1.92, so we're asking you to be as generous as you can to kind of start that process to get them off the streets.
And the number again is 888-955-9557, because, David, I had a young lady who called me this hour, and she said, "Well, you're talking about these DACAs," and I said, "Well, yeah, the deferred action cases involving people who are not following the laws. That's different than compassion. And in fact, I think this is exactly where government's job is not to be compassionate. Private charity and private individuals like you and me, our job is to be compassionate. I mean, the average cop who pulls somebody over, if he's pulling somebody over who's a dad who hasn't bought his Christmas presents for his kid yet, he might say, well, if I write you this ticket, you won't have the money to buy Christmas presents for your kids. So I'm going to be compassionate, not write you the ticket. No, the law and the government should be relatively blind to that. I think it's up to private organizations like Union Gospel Mission and individuals like you and me to say we can be compassionate and say you may have made some mistakes in your life, you may have made some misjudgments, but if you're still trying to get out and fix your circumstances, we can put a meal in your belly and then we can figure out a way to get you lined up so that you can get the job you want.
Well, we feel that compassion has legs to it, to the point where our success rate, as we've talked about, 75% of those who go through our long-term programs and they graduate don't relapse. I mean, this is exactly what we're called to do. And so as we ask you to call and we ask you to give, we do have that sense of urgency, of course, with just about 5 minutes left. And I'll put it out there as well. If you need a tax deduction, you know, a $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 gift, this is the time. So please call 888-955-9557. The next $1,750 that comes in, well, that's part of a doubling challenge. So that goes even further. But that tax deduction for those larger gifts, it's a great way to invest and get the benefit there. So 888-955-9557. But we only have about five more minutes.
David, thank you very much for what you do at the Union Gospel Mission, and we appreciate you joining us today and letting us take part in this effort.
No, thanks for the opportunity. Let's go feed some people. And
absolutely right. Let's fill some bellies and get people off the streets, out of addiction, and into a warm place with a meal in front of them. David, thank you very much. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277 is the number to call to join the best conversation in talk journalism. John's on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, John. Lars, I just want to say that was great. I've been able to help people in the mission, and it's a great organization.
It is, isn't it? It's a great organization.
It is. Yeah, I used to help out when I lived in Bellingham, but I live on the coast of Oregon now. Hey, I work for a nationally drug chain. Don't want to mention the name. But here's the latest scam. We've got people coming in, buying 15 cases of water on food stamps.
Yep.
They go outside our store, they dump the water out, and then they bring the bottles back in to get the 10 cents per bottle so they can take that money and buy probably drugs or alcohol or whatever.
Or cigarettes or like you said, alcohol, booze, whatever.
It just makes a guy really mad.
Do you know how easily we could fix that, John?
How can we fix it?
Well, here's the thing. If you have food stamps, should you be able to buy soda pop with it? My answer would be no. Food stamps are supposed to be a supplement to your budget. Supplement means added to. So if you already have a $200 monthly food budget and that's not enough to feed your family, and the government says we'll give you $200 in food stamps, now you have a $400 budget. Buy the soda pop out of your own budget. But the quickest way to do it would be to say on any deposit bottles, the person buying that has to pay that in cash. So if mom wants to buy her kids a six-pack of soda pop once a week, and she's willing to pay 60 cents in deposit, and then when she brings the cans back, a week later she gets the 60 cents back. So it's no loss to her, but it means that she's not going to pull the water bottle trick either. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
And away from a conversation about the white supremacy that lives and breathes within every single white person standing here right now, I refuse to shut my mouth and let white people set this agenda. If what I'm saying right now pisses you off or makes you feel targeted and defensive, good. When the white gays, the white middle class assimilationist motherfucking gays took over the movement later with their assimilationist goals, kicked them out because they wouldn't act grateful for the scraps given to them by the racist politicians, racist police forces, and racist housing policies. They were black and brown people who understood that our liberation as queers is not distinct from other forms of liberation, and their struggle, my struggle, is not over.
Wow, that is Professor Lowe, who is a professor no longer at Evergreen State College. She has been let go. She has resigned. And along with her resignation, she gets a wonderful parting gift, Johnny, of $240,000 in settlement. That's right. A publicly funded university like Evergreen is going to pay her almost $250,000 just to leave. Can you imagine that? She is our Twitter poll today. Should trouble-causing public employees get golden parachutes in order to make them leave their public sector jobs? I'd say no to that. By the way, in yesterday's Twitter poll, we asked you, is a new billion-dollar investment by Facebook worth what it takes from the citizens? 70% of you said no, and only 30% of you said yes. We're talking about the data centers in Prineville. And today, we're helping out the Union Gospel Mission, a great faith-based organization that feeds hungry people. We're going to help you get people out of addiction, off the streets, into a warm place with a meal in front of them, and a 75% track record of success. $1.92 feeds one person, $50 feeds a couple of dozen, $100 feeds four dozen, and the place to donate is 888-955-9557. That's 888-955-9557. Our Twitter poll can be found online at LarsLarson.com and also on Twitter at LarsLarsonShow. Should those trouble-causing public employees get golden parachutes? Not only no, but hell no. Come on. This is craziness, the kind of stuff that we have to put up with, all this stuff that passes as college. Do you think I would love to hear from the parent of an Evergreen college student who thinks that his son or daughter, or if they haven't yet determined their gender, his ex, is getting a good education by being at Evergreen, listening to the kind of claptrap that came from a young lady like that. Out there screaming and yelling about race and gender and sexual preference and blah, blah, blah. And it's crazy. She was drawing a public paycheck. Now she's got almost $250,000 as a going away present. And anybody who thinks that's right, I would love to have them call the show and tell me why. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let's go to Camus and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Thanks so much for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too, and your wife. Hey, I'm kind of upset right now with President Trump because all of a sudden now Roy Moore lost, and now Trump is kowtowing to this new Democrat. I mean, you just said hell, so what the hell?
Can I tell you what I think his goal is? We elected him. We elected Trump to get some things done. He made some promises. He's been trying, as near as I can tell, to fulfill all those promises. And to do that, he needs votes in the United States Senate. And one of the things he's pointed out is, let me put it to you this way, Jim. I think that President Trump, by saying Doug Jones is the choice of the people of Alabama, is he Donald Trump's choice? No, he's not. I mean, Trump backed Luther Strange, the incumbent, at first, and then Strange was beaten by Roy Moore. And for a time, President Trump did not back Judge Roy Moore. And then finally, he did right before the vote was taken yesterday. But the people of Alabama ended up by a majority of 1.5%. They chose Doug Jones. So what is President Trump's only, well, what's his only option really at that point? He can say, I don't agree with that choice. Or he can say this man is now a member of the United States Senate and he will be casting ballots on behalf of Alabama on these things come January. So if President Trump wants to get his agenda done, and I would argue he does, then he would like to get the vote of Doug Jones. In fact, it'd be great to see a Democrat like Jones break ranks with the Democrat Party and say the people back in Alabama want me to vote for a tax plan, want me to vote for getting rid of Obamacare, want me to vote for a southern border wall, and they want me to vote for nationwide concealed carry reciprocity, among other things. Now, if he can get Jones' vote on any of those, then President Trump is closer to fulfilling his promise to the American public. Do you think he should spit in Doug Jones' eye just so he'll feel better? Or do you think he should try a play that might actually get him a vote on one of the issues?
You know, that's why I like to call into you, Lars, because you always help me understand the whole big picture. But it just feels like to a lot of us that my president, your president, and the president who was elected by the Electoral College, he's waffling now. He's waffling back and forth now.
But I don't see it as waffling. It's It's a matter. Look, Jim, you've worked jobs. I don't know if you're retired or working. Are you working now?
Retired broadcaster.
Okay. Well, when you came into work, did you occasionally come into work at your job and find out there was a new boss in charge?
Oh, you've been broadcasting a long time, Lars.
I know.
You know that happens twice a year.
Bosses come and go. Now, is there any percentage to be had by walking down the hall to the new boss's office and saying, I like the old guy, and then spit in the, your new boss's face? Is there any percentage there?
No.
Okay. On the other hand, you go down the hall, you could say, I'll be honest with you, I really liked your predecessor, and I don't know anything about you, but I'll work with you if I can work with you. Is there a percentage in that?
Yes, there is.
And so, without violating any of your principles, you can say, I'd like to work with you. And if the guy says, well, what'll it take to work with you? Be honest with me. Tell me the truth and tell me what you really want, and we'll be able to work together. If you lie to me, I won't think well of it. I'll bet any boss wouldn't mind hearing that.
Well, as you've been in broadcasting a long time, and I spent my years there too, I got to tell you that, you know, that happened to me many times, and some worked out, some didn't.
And that's all I'm saying is I'm not saying that Doug Jones is Donald Trump's new boss, but he's a vote that Donald Trump would like to have. And he may not get it, but I want to tell you something. The warnings to Doug Jones are serious. Think about where Doug Jones sits right now. He's now an incumbent U.S. senator, but he's got to run again in 2020, just 2 years from now. And the people of Alabama are not going to be impressed by Doug Jones voting for abortion, where the people of Alabama disagree with him, or a bunch of other issues, Second Amendment issues and others. So Doug Jones, if he wants to stay a U.S. senator more than 2 years, may have to figure out when he decides to break with the Democrat Party and vote for the best interests of the people of the state he represents. And that's not a bad thing to do. Thanks for the call, by the way. If you want to help us out in helping the Union Gospel Mission and the Union Gospel Mission's mission of getting people off the streets, out of addiction, into a warm place, and a meal in front of them, $1.92 feeds one, $50 feeds a couple of dozen. The place to donate, as I have today on behalf of Tina and me, is 888-955-9557. That's 888-955-9557. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Our Twitter poll today: should trouble-causing public employees, and we've highlighted a few of these over the last few weeks, get golden parachutes and usually a six or seven figure paycheck, well, six figure paychecks anyway, to be able to leave their jobs? That one doesn't make any sense to me. And by the way, there was another story that I saw today, and I thought it comes out of an entirely different subject, but it has to do with child care. And they say that the Northwest has very expensive child care. In fact, Oregon ranks in the top 10 nationally for unaffordability of child care based on 8 different standards of care by Child Care Aware of America. By one measure, Oregon is the 3rd least affordable state, and by another one, it's the 10th worst. Either way, it's very expensive. Let me suggest something to you. And they give some of the numbers, like infant care is over $12,000 a year, and then toddler care runs just a little bit less than that. It's a gigantic sum of money to take care of one child. Now, I think the ideal place for a child is at home with mom or dad or both, if you can afford to do that. And if you've planned your child, you may be able to afford to do that. But if you end up putting the child in child care, it can often cost so much money that if you put them in child care so one of you can work a job, almost the entire paycheck from that job might end up going to care for one or two children, which means you might as well stay home with the kids and be mom or dad at home with the kids instead. Let me suggest, though, that one of the reasons it's expensive is licensing, regulation, and minimum wage rules here in the Northwest. Those three things alone make child care very unaffordable. Now to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And an invitation to help us out in helping out the Union Gospel Mission. $1.92 feeds one person. $50 feeds a couple of dozen people. Call 888-955-9557 to help out. Tina and I have made a contribution. It's 888-955-9557. Let's go to James, who's calling in from Vaughan, Washington. Hey, James, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello, good evening, sir. I'm honored. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you 5x5. What's up?
Well, sir, this here idea will not leave me alone. You know, let me give you a little background.
All right.
A couple years ago, I was heading into Bremerton, the naval shipyard up here in Tacoma, Seattle area.
Yep.
And they do repairs, naval vessels and mothballs and this and that. And it just had a horrendous storm that decimated this poor country. I forget exactly where it was. But I happened to be driving by this aircraft carrier, sitting in mothballs, going to rest, right?
Yep.
And this country just lost everything. Everything. And here I'm driving by this empty city. You know, it's got 2,000 rooms aboard, hospital, galley, food. I mean, it even has a bridge. It's a city. You land airplanes on the top of it. Okay? And then I thought to myself, well, God, what they need is one of these things down there, full of Navy corpsmen or rescue people, land on the shore, get us some fresh water, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was just an early idea kind of in clay.
Okay, so you want to house homeless people in old mothballed aircraft carriers or ships?
Well, yeah, sort of. Now, it would be a little more than that. I know it's a lot more complicated than that. But these people that are living under a bridge right now with their shopping cart and their car, you know, they would be just delighted with any dry room, you know. Now, mind you, it would be a voluntary program. Not everybody's going to be saved. A lot of people don't even want it. They just want to stay high until they die.
Right.
Understand that.
Well, can I tell you what I see the problem as?
Please.
If you have an old ship like that, old ships like that cost a tremendous amount of money to take care of. In fact, there was a proposal not long ago to have one of those tied up on the Columbia River as a museum ship. So you didn't even have people on it, but it would be kept as a museum. The annual costs were in the millions of dollars to be able to do that just as an empty ship. The minute you put people into any circumstance, whether it's a building or a ship or something else, the costs go up dramatically. Because then you have safety issues, you have wiring issues, you have plumbing issues, you have cleaning issues. You have, I mean, for instance, the big tunnel they just finished under the city of Seattle, they say just the cost of heating and ventilating and taking care of that big concrete tunnel is $5 million a year. So I think the cost of housing people on board a ship would be tremendously more expensive than having them almost anywhere else, as long as you had to meet all of the safety requirements that are required.
Right. I was thinking about that. And I know this with the, like I said before, I know there's a thousand things in this idea. First of all, Chris, the people that are living under the bridge with the shopping cart, they're not worried about going anywhere. They just want to stay dry, you know, and maybe get a meal. So it would be a volunteer program. Now, the ship doesn't have to go anywhere. The training system pretty much would be volunteer. I mean, as opposed to the cost of building each homeless person a house, like the mayor of Seattle, what a brilliant, you know, idea there. How do I get on that then? You know, let's build them all a house. Oh, yeah, okay. We're here.
Well, how about, I've got a better idea. You know what the best social program in the world is? I'm stealing from Ronald Reagan. It's called a job. You get a job, and you start paying your own bills. Let's go to Mary. Hey, Mary, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to point out that the DACA kids, some of them don't come in with their parents. They come in unescorted.
Yep.
Also, people need to realize that not all of them are working. Some of them, especially the women, will just go ahead and have families and draw welfare off from them, and if they're in here illegally, they're not having social security numbers, so they're having to have you stolen social security numbers,
which is also a crime. Mary, that's a very good point. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Paul. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think you mean this Paul, right? Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, I have been a gardener my whole life, and it has gotten to the point where I can't even make a living anymore. But beyond that, what's worse is housing. If you do make money and you don't make much, finding housing is unheard of in most big cities, even in places like Madison, Wisconsin. And honestly, if you took 16 million people out of this country, and I believe the numbers are higher than 16 million, it might be a lot easier for these homeless people to find a place to live, which is the American dream. Even if you don't own it, at least you've got a place where you're warm and dry and you can cook and have a dog. And Democrats, and I got to say this, I've only been listening to you for 2 weeks.
Thank you.
I was very much so a liberal and a Democrat, and I really, really think that they have forgotten about Americans. They are more worried about Syrians getting a house and people from Mexico getting a house, instead of them saying to these Mexicans, why don't you go back to Mexico and make Mexico great again? They're saying, oh, no, come here and make America worse.
You know, Paul, it sounds like you've left your liberal roots behind, and I think that's a good thing. You can be more conservative, and you can understand that we should be concerned about the people in our country first. Help out the Union Gospel Mission. Donate at 888-955-9557. To Lars Larson Cho, somebody just wrote in and said, Lars, you've got to give me the MP3 file of that professor at Evergreen State College with her ranting and her raving. Of course, the one you can find online is the one in which Ms. Lowe is using a number of swear words that we can't use on the air, so we had to beep those out. But I actually sent that MP3 file off to the emailer, and I'm glad to do that. You can find this woman's rantings all over, and you kind of wonder which college is going to pick her up next. And this one comes in. Lance Smith says, Lars, here in Olympia, we refer to it as the Evergreen State College for the politically insane. Feel free to join us. I would be glad to do that. Maybe we could be a little kinder, though, and call it the Evergreen State College for the confused, because it might be a little bit more warm and fuzzy. By the way, we're trying to help out the Union Gospel Mission today. They do great work. They have about a 75% track record of success. And I think that's pretty good, given that the government usually comes in at about half of that. The Union Gospel Mission helps people out of addiction, off the streets, into a warm place, and puts a warm meal in front of them. $1.92 feeds one. $50 feeds a couple of dozen. Call 888-955-9557 to join your donation with mine. That's 888-955-9557. Let's go to David, who's calling in from Eastern Oregon, and Joseph. Good to hear from Joseph, Dave. How's the wolf problem out there?
Well, ask the ranchers.
Yeah, they tell me it's taken apart their way of making a living.
Yeah, it's hurt them, but they finally got to where if they can see the wolf in their pasture with their livestock, then they can go ahead and shoot him.
That's a good rule.
But,
of course, they may do a lot of their hunting at night, which makes it awfully hard to see them when it's dark.
The problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. One rancher, he lost cattle out there north of Palau, I think it was, Enterprise. And finally, Game Commission come out. They had that pack timed to come in about 5 o'clock in the morning. So they ambushed him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was good. But that's the farmer and the rancher and the Game Commission finally working together.
Well, do you know what's crazy, Dave? Before we leave the wolves altogether, this week there was a story, I think it was in the Spokane paper, and in it they said that the Fish and Wildlife Department in Washington State had done a study of wolves, and they had determined that the wolves have no impact on the wild game population in Washington State. And I thought, you know, that seems kind of crazy to me, because they estimate there are more than 100 wolves. And I know the biologists will tell you the wolves, sometimes wolves kill just to kill, and sometimes they kill to eat. But if they're just killing to eat, they may kill one big game animal a week. And so if you think 100 wolves times 52 deer or elk per year, that's about five. Well, it's Am I doing the math right? Yeah, 52 times 100. So we're talking about 50,000 animals, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of animals.
Yeah.
And yet that's not having an impact?
They did file an environmental impact study to bring the wolves in. And they say the wolves crossed the dam. Well, we know up here that they planted them on Airplane Ridge.
I believe
right
it.
Right there on the divide.
But for some reason, they don't think it's a problem at all. You didn't call in about that, though, did you?
No. I called in. You was talking about the immigrants that is in here illegally, and they've been here a long time, 20 years, and they've had kids.
Some of them have, yeah.
School. There's a thing, you know, the kids are now citizens.
Yep.
So I understand it.
Well, even though that's a misinterpretation of the 14th Amendment, but it's the current interpretation, so go ahead.
Yeah. Well, if we deport the parents and the rest of them back to Mexico, we've got this thing called chain immigration.
Yep.
And, of course, Trump's trying to get rid of that now.
Yes, he is.
But that's what happened a while back with that bomber, you know.
You're talking about the bomber this week in the subway?
Right.
Yeah, he came in through chain migration. He was, right. I think he was the third or fourth person. They let in one person, and then they let in somebody else who's related to that person. And by the time they get to him, they let him in. And apparently he's not happy to be here, so he decides to murder some of the people in the country that took him in.
But there again, these kids could have their parents right back in the United States through that chain immigration.
Unless we change chain migration and say we're no longer going to do it that way. And I think you and I are on the same page, Dave. I think we'd both like to end that practice, and I appreciate the call. Let's go to Spokane and talk to Rob. Hey, Rob, thanks for listening on KXLY. What's on your mind?
Hey, first-time caller, slowly becoming addicted to your program.
Thank you, sir.
So I kind of tail end off the previous caller about the wolf. And then I had a thought as we were listening that the wolf is right there with the illegal immigrants in chain migration. Anyways, I don't know, Lars, if you're aware, I think it was within the week, the lovely state of Washington Game Department made a bold statement that there is no evidence of the wolf having any impact on deer, elk, moose or sheep.
And that was exactly the study that you're bringing up, exactly the study. Maybe I'd seen it in the Spokesman Review, because I do take a look at the local paper in Spokane online, and they were saying it has no impact. And I did my math wrong. If there are 100 wolves and only 100, Idaho's now at about 1,300, and they take 52 animals a year, one a week, then we're talking about over 5,000 deer and elk that they would take. It's hard for me to believe that taking 5,000 deer and elk does not have an impact on the game population.
Well, I will tell you that when I was hunting elk about 5 weeks ago, and I ran into a person that, I don't know who specifically he worked for, but he had the collar. He was tracking collared animals.
Yeah.
The moose. So he was doing a study, and he had two wolf kills in the last 2 weeks in that GMU up here in Northwest in the Sashine Lake area. And there's also wolf. I had my friend and I were hunting elk in Springdale, and we've got wolves howling on our phone, and we got wolf tracks in Springdale, Washington, which is not too far out of it's prior to Chihuahua and Colville and the northern. And there's also evidence of wolf on Mica. And I've hunted all these places, and this year, Lars, I hunted in the snow, which is really, really nice, and I ran across hardly any tracks of any animal. There was no animals in the forest. I mean, no tracks. And I probably hiked 15 miles, you know. I mean, there was a track here and there, of course, but
well, I think the predators have done a real job. And in fact, Rob, I read an essay last week that I was meaning to mention, and the guy who wrote the essay his thesis was the wildfires in California these last couple of weeks that have done so much damage are much more severe because of lack of predator control. And what he pointed out was that California had put a stop to most hunting of cougar in the state of California. And he pointed out that in the 1960s, there were about 2.5 million deer in the state. There aren't nearly as many elk. There are some in some areas, but there were 2.5 million deer. And he said today there are about 300,000. And he said the cougar population in the state is about 6,000. And each one of those cougar eats about 52 deer a year, about one big game animal a week. So that adds up to about 300,000 animals, 6,000 times 52. And so, you know, if the end result of that is that tens of thousands of these animals are dying or being eaten, he pointed out how many pounds of grass the average deer eats every single day. Grass and brush and everything else, especially the green shoots that are coming up when they're fresh. And he pointed out that the impact on the deer population has probably done a real job on the state by allowing a lot more undergrowth to grow up and get thick and then die when the summer, you know, we get to the last days of summer and the water's gone. And that all that stuff is just tuned up to burn. And he makes a very good case that the failure to control the predator population has actually put the state in a really good position to burn every year.
Well, it also puts the animals that are doing their natural job of that grazing, because they roam around and they take care of a wide area. It also condenses those animals, and then they run out of food.
Yep.
You know.
And so you end up with a problem all the way around. Rob, thanks for the call from Spokane, and thanks for listening on KXLY. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
I have been getting prepared and ready to work a job. Through the program of the last year, I've been able to get my driver's license back. I've been able to get some bills taken care of. And it's really the time where I'm getting on up and healing. I've been doing a lot of family healing where I actually get in contact with my daughter, and her last birthday in July, I got to buy her an actual birthday present. And this Christmas, I'll be able to have her here. And I know better times are coming.
Now, that's a man by the name of James, and he's being helped out by the Union Gospel Mission. And Dave Harms is with me from UGM, and hey, we're trying to feed people today, right, Dave?
Yeah, it's just $1.92 to provide a meal and care at the Union Gospel Mission. And so we are just asking you to make sure nobody goes hungry during the holiday season. And you can see that that kind of restoration happens. If we can get them in, then that kind of life change can happen, but we got to get them in, and that's where the meal comes in, because that's the most basic need.
And if you want to dial in with a donation, Tina and I have made one. My friend Kirby Wilbur made one. 888-955-9557. A buck 92 feeds one. If 50 bucks feeds a couple of dozen, 100 feeds more than four dozen. So this man, James, talked about how he wants to get back out and work a job. So UGM doesn't just put meals in people's bellies. They actually help people off of addiction, out off the street, and back into real lives.
Well, I mean, if I could be so bold, I would say that if you're concerned about enabling somebody, then that's where the panhandler comes in, right? That likely is the person that will not take that money and use it for anything but their addiction or whatever you don't want them to do. The way that you tackle the problem is to deal with the root cause of it. And to do that, we provide the meals that are the main reason that people would come in. And then from there, we launch into the programs that do get them off the street. So this is, in my opinion, the opposite of enabling. This is the ability to say, look, I want to be a help, but not the kind of helping that hurts.
Right.
Make sense?
Well, the kind of helping that puts people back into the bottle or further into the pipe.
Yeah, we that's what we do not want to do. And so we do want to end the issue, end the problem, get them out of the neighborhoods, out from under the bridges, out from the camps. And that's why one of our newest outreaches is a search and rescue van that actually doesn't wait for them to come to us to get to that point. We go to them in the van with some of the basic things that they would need, but it starts the relationship.
Things like socks and coats and hats and things like that.
Well, and then it starts the connection point, the relationship that we say, you know, there's a better way. And some would say, I've fallen too far. And we say, no, you haven't.
No.
Oh, and this is, in a sense, this is America. We can get you back. But you got to start with the basics, and that's what your $1.92 would do.
All right, $1.92 feeds one. 50 bucks feeds a couple of dozen. $100 feeds four dozen, more than four dozen. 888-955-9557. David?
Yeah, real quick. We had a $2,000 match in place. We came up $315 still to go.
Yeah.
So we'll extend this now for, well, I guess, five more minutes.
Yeah.
Right? So jump in, a doubling match, $315 left. So 888-955-9557. 888-955-9557.
David, thank you very much for what you do at UGM.
A pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Merry Christmas to you and yours. Glad to have you with me on the Radio Northwest Network. Let's go to, let me go to Naysayer Joni. We love Naysayers, Joni. Thanks for listening on KONA. What's on your mind?
My name's Johnny.
Johnny.
Immigrants help the United States because you have to understand how division of labor works and that our economy is not a zero-sum game. If you have an assembly line with 50 Americans and then you add 50 immigrants, you know, all you have to do is just chop their jobs in half, divide the labor even more, and they're going to make at least twice as many products, probably a lot more than that.
How do you make twice as many products by chopping jobs in half?
You're going to make the same amount of you're going to be doing a smaller job. Like if you take like a spear, like one person makes the handle, one person makes the head, and then you chop that in half, you're going to be able to make twice as more because you're going to have more people working on it. It's like many hands make light work.
I agree with you that many hands make light work, but how is it that, why don't we just have all of those jobs filled by American citizens and resident legal aliens with green cards? Where's the advantage to employing people who are breaking our law?
The economy cannot grow fast enough.
I got to tell you something. Johnny, are you aware that there are, Johnny, are you aware that there are about 80 million people of working age who are not working a job right now in America?
That's not because of immigrants. That's because the government is handcuffing, you know, the hands of businesses.
Well, if the jobs are filled with illegal aliens at a lower wage, then you can't fill them with American citizens at a higher wage. That's pretty simple math. By the way, thanks a lot for the call, Johnny, and sorry about the mess up on your name. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.